What's on your mind right now? The song you can't get out of your head? That breaking story? Or that conversation you just have to be a part of?
That's the brand new song from...
This is a breaking news report.
He shoots! He scores!
That's radio. Happening now. Connecting you to what matters most exactly when it's happening. From the airwaves to every device you stream on, radio is everywhere you are. It's local, live, and it's for you. Tag your favorite radio station today on social media and use hashtag National Radio Day to celebrate. That's hashtag National Radio Day.
Welcome back to Fesco and Dusty on your home for Royals baseball, 96.5 The Fan.
Long time listener and supporter of you because you tell it like it is.
Here's our Royals insider, Josh Vernier.
That's right. The sexiest voice in Kansas City, your Royals insider here on 96.5 The Fan, Josh Vernier, who will join you tonight at 5:30 as those Texas Rangers come to town. Vern, how about we do one word with you? One word on this weekend series against the White Sox.
Successful. Taking all three, keeping the Chicago White Sox a losing team. Unfortunately, you don't make up any ground in the wild card race, but they needed, and they still need to do something special. You know, taking two of three is the bare minimum moving forward in every single series. But they need to do something special after the hole they dug themselves in the month of June. And to sweep a team at the big league level, that's special. You know, to take three of four from the Texas Rangers, to me, that's a special series. You're going to need a few more sweeps. You're going to need to do a few more special things. And taking all three from the White Sox this weekend was certainly a successful three-game stay.
Yeah, no doubt about it, man. I thought it was awesome to see him go out there and keep the losing team losing. But, Vern, I think what also this shows, not just you, but I use the collective you, us, we, all of us, the four has not moved, as you mentioned. And you can go out there and sweep a team and still be in the exact same spot in the standings. As the games start to shrink and shrink and shrink and shrink, we're four back with 38 to play, essentially five back. So essentially you've got a magic number of 33 is kind of what we're looking at. That four, man, that bothered the hell out of me that hasn't changed in like 6 months, I feel like.
Especially since every time you turn on the baseball highlights from around the game, you know, everyone's dumping on the Yankees for playing stupid baseball and for pressing and for, you know, another late season swoon from the Pinstripers. And, you know, you love to see that, and then somehow the Royals aren't making up any ground. Yeah, that's why, you know, dating back to right before the All-Star break, when they dropped two of three at home to the Mets, that was the moment where it was obvious, all right, it's no longer in the Royals' hands. They no longer control their fate. Now, they still, if they win, will find themselves there in the end, but they're going to need some external help from the Yankees, from the Guardians, and likely from some other teams. Listen, but you know, this is exactly what Major League Baseball wants. They wanted you know, half of the league to still believe they have a chance going into the final month of the season, and it's paying off in a majority of cities, I have to imagine, because I know Kansas City remains locked in. You know, pretty decent crowds this weekend. I can understand why yesterday took a little bit of a step back as it was a billion degrees.
Oh God, yeah.
At first pitch, I don't think I've sweat in the last year combined as much as Luke Maley sweat behind the dish yesterday. I couldn't imagine being a catcher in Kansas City, which, seeing that I mentioned it, I heard you guys talking about Salvador Perez earlier, and you're right. He is, since the All-Star break, having a really good second half of the season. But if you look at that sample size, since they traded Freddie Fermin and Salvi's back to being a true starting catcher, starting six times, you know, five or six times a week in this brutal Kansas City heat, it is starting to affect his bat. He's hitting about .165 since they traded Freddie Fermin. Now, the power is still showing up on occasion, so it's only a slightly below league average OPS, but that's something to monitor here in the final 38 games, because for as good as Mike Yastrzemski and Adam Frazier have been, and they've been outstanding, you need that thump from Salvi to ultimately track down the New York Yankees. So I'll be interested to see how they handle the captain over the final 38. How much more do you want to see Luke Maley behind the dish? You know, tough to say, but you have to have a really good bat from Salvador Perez, especially if he's going to be hitting in that five spot. So another thing to monitor down the stretch.
Also, thanks to monitor, Vern, maybe the battery made of Salvador Perez once Seth Lugo. Have you noticed anything different maybe in the last five starts that hasn't quite been there throughout the regular season? Maybe he's, you know, fatigued, maybe something, yeah. You know, or it's just been a bad stretch of five games because the last start he had the grand slam in the five-run spot in the first.
Yeah. No, he's been bad really since the All-Star game. An ERA, I believe, around 7. Mm. 25 earned runs and 30 and a third innings. You know, Seth Lugo's been just bad. The command's been bad. At times you're even wondering what's going on with the control, which obviously has you leaning towards one of two explanations. One is the finger injury that landed him on the IL earlier in the season, an injury that he said is going to be present until I get extended rest. An extended rest isn't going to happen until the off season. So, you know, it's in there, but both Lugo and his manager push back quickly on that and say, I feel fine. You know, it's not the finger. It's not a health issue. So, okay. If it's not that, then to me, it has to be that you're tiring after throwing more than 200 innings last season. And basically outside of that quick stint on the IL, Seth Lugo's taking the ball every fifth day, but in conversations with Matt Quatrero, when they dive into the, the data, the pitch data for Seth Lugo, there's nothing that screams this is a fatigued 36-year-old. So if they're not going to take any of those easy excuses, I'm not going to continue to give it to them. So bottom line, Seth Lugo needs to pitch better. He's disappointed in the second half. He knows it better than anybody. And he needs to earn that contract here down the final, 7-8 starts that he makes.
Yeah, it's easy to go with the low-hanging fruit and say, since he signed the contract, he hasn't been any good, but he hasn't. And also, since they traded Freddie Fermin, I mean, how much of a residual effect is that trade going to have on Lugo? Because his ERA is basically 2.5 runs per game better with Freddie Fermin behind the plate than with Salvi and with Luke Maley.
Yeah, and you know, that also aligns with, you know, when they traded Freddie's right around the All-Star break, right, which is when we've seen Lugo really take a nosedive, while in the first half of the season he was outstanding. Some of it certainly has to do with Freddie. I'm not going to chalk up a majority of it to that, but Freddie Fermin was the best defensive catcher on this team, was the best game caller. I thought he did the best job of controlling the base running game. Salvi's a future Hall of Famer and a multi-time Gold Glover, so he's, you know, no slouch, but, you know, this is something, Bob, that we've been talking about for decades. You know, mm-hmm. Salvi, for as great as his bat is and for the improvements that he's made defensively, there is he's not the best game caller. He's not the best game caller. And I think you saw that over the course of this homestand, the game where Carlos Estevez gave up a run in the ninth inning. I didn't like the pitch selection from Salvi and Estevez, throwing that young man three straight changeups that ultimately cost him the game. You see what Freddie's doing out in San Diego, hitting mm-hmm. well above 300, you know, an OPS well above the league average. And again, this is a guy last year that finished top three for the American League Gold Glove as a backup catcher. So, yeah, no doubt about it. The impact of Freddie Fermin is going to be felt. And, you know, that should be expected, especially when you see what Ryan Burkert is doing through his three starts. So to get 6 years of a 25-year-old pitcher that appears to not have a pulse when he's out there on the mound, just laconic as all get out, just very Cole Reagans-esque out there on the bump. You're going to have to give up something pretty good to acquire an arm like that. And we all know just how good Freddie Fermin is. So, yeah, that's certainly been felt. But, shoot, man, if Ryan Burger keeps pitching like this, I think we'll take that trade-off.
You look at outside of the league, we heard the audio of Q on Cags. You know, something's going to have to open up for him to get back up on this roster. Do you think he comes up when they do the expansion of the roster on September in that date, or do you think he just stays in AAA the rest of the year?
I think he'll be here September 1st. You know, the issue right now is you don't need a right fielder. You have a right fielder. The platoon of Yastrzemski and Grichuk, Yastrzemski is so much better than anybody else defensively out there in right field, especially a rookie first baseman like Jack Caglione. So you don't need a right fielder. You don't need a first baseman with Vinny and Salvi. So to me, as of right now, with the roster being what it is without injuries, Jack Caglione's avenue to the big leagues is as a designated hitter. And the only way I'm bringing up a 22-year-old as a designated hitter, because also he needs to be in there every day. I'm not looking at Cags as a platoon player while he could be getting every day at-bats down in AAA. The only way I'm bringing him up is if he's oozing with confidence. But if I'm going to say you don't need your glove, you're just coming up here to DH, man, oozing with confidence. And there's no way you can ooze confidence after just 1 week in AAA, especially after a hamstring injury and all of the struggles that he had at the big league level. You know, mm-hmm. that's in the back of his mind. You know you want those thoughts eradicated by the end of the season. That's why I think he will get up here and get a chance, because you want Jack Caglione going into the offseason knowing that those struggles he had in his first stint in the big leagues were all just a part of the process. You want him to see some success going into the offseason so he can hit the ground running in 2026. Yeah, I would say he'll be here September 1st, but I think he spends this week in AAA before the front office has a real conversation about possibly calling him up in a week from now.
And also, too, Vern, as Q pointed out, circumstances are different right now, right? You're in the middle of a playoff race. You're two games or whatever it is over 500. You're only four back of that final playoff spot. I don't see how you put Jack Caglione in the lineup right now. He's not one of your 26 best players. And how do you look at everybody else in that room and say, you know, Grichik or Yaz or anybody from that nature, Frazier is getting, you know, less at bats to give a guy who had 41 games, very small size, obviously, didn't produce. I think if you were out of it, I would have Cags back up here. But you're in it right now. You can't afford to waste at bats to get guys comfortable, if you will, going into next season. What do you think about that?
Yeah. Or to save face for the organization that made a decision to call up Jack Caglione earlier than many people expected and possibly costing themselves a year of service time. So there's also some, J.J. Piccolo, John Sherman, hey, we want to prove that the decision that we made was the right decision. So I'm sure there's a part of them that wants to save face. But yeah, you lose a clubhouse if you do something like that. If you put a guy like Mike Yastrzemski, you start giving him days off, even though in eight starts as the leadoff hitter, he has more walks than strikeouts in OPS north of 800. Adam Frazier's an everyday player now, and for good reason. He's batting .329 since joining the Royals. You know, Randall Grichik just had his best day as a Royal on Saturday. Michael, Bobby, you're not moving those guys. Jonathan India, since being dropped in the lineup, has played eight games, has eight hits, half of them going for extra bases. No, I'm not saying that this team is set the way that the 2015 team was, where you knew the starting nine every single night, but Bobby, Vinny, Michael, Salvi, you know that's going to be your 2 through 5. I can't imagine moving Frazier or India out of that 6 or 7. You know, Yastrzemski up at the top, maybe you have, two spots open, the DH spot and maybe left field? Okay, so John Rave, by the way, since the All-Star game, has an on-base percentage of .365. I don't see where the at-bat is for Jack Caglione, let alone at-bats plural. So, keep finding that confidence down in Omaha, and when you fit in, you'll get in.
And also, too, Vern, guys who maybe deserve to have, you know, seats on the bench aren't here anymore. Like, all these guys right now, in my opinion, deserve to be playing every day.
And the guys that are on the bench, thankfully, and with all due respect to them, that is their role. I mean, there were, throughout the month of May and June and July, there were so many times where you would look at the lineup and, you know, you like Nick Lofton, you like John Rave, you like Tyler Tolbert, but these guys aren't someone that you necessarily want to see in the lineup four out of every six games. You want them mixed and matched and coming off the bench and platooned and whatnot. So, when you bring in the veterans of Grichik and Frazier and Mike Yastrzemski. Again, you're lopping MJ Melendez and Drew Waters and Michael Massey. These are the guys that are either coming off the roster or now need to fight to get back on the roster. Yeah, your 40-man roster, your 26-man roster, your organization became stronger and the competition ratcheted up. Now, in the offseason, we can talk about the decisions that were made last spring and the team building put forth and what we can learn from the early season struggles of the 2025 Royals. But once again, you know, for the second straight year, credit to John Sherman and J.J. Piccolo for not sitting on their hands and saying, well, not in the cards for us. No, they stayed aggressive. And, you know, for the questions I had about the decisions they made at the beginning of the season, as this team apparently lacked leadership, you know, credit to J.J. Piccolo for knowing his roster at the deadline and knowing exactly what they needed. Because, boy, did he bring in some perfect pieces.
Speaking of those roster expansions on September 1st, Vern, do you think there's any sort of chance that Carter Jensen might get that call-up as well with Cags? Kind of bring your buddy up and a little bit of support there as well, because he's been raking down there.
No, I don't. Okay. You only get one. Well, I guess you get two roster spots. Normally it's one pitcher and one position player, but I guess the Royals could bring up two position players and stay at 13 arms. No, I don't see that with Carter Jensen. Now, he's certainly had an outstanding season already with double-digit home runs since being promoted to AAA. You know, so long as Salvi and Luke Maley remain healthy, I think Jensen stays in AAA and takes just an immense amount of confidence into the offseason after, you know, going to the Futures game and realizing, man, I'm just as good as any of these guys and really stealing the show out there at the Futures game. To struggling early in the season at AA, Jack Caglione is promoted, and then all of a sudden you see Carter Jensen really start to take off, and it's been nonstop ever since then. I think he's going to take so much confidence into the offseason. He's one of those guys that I can't wait to lay eyes on next spring to see what that offseason work looked like as he prepares for his third big league camp working alongside Salvador Perez. At a camp that I would expect him to maybe come out with a spot on the opening day roster in 2026. So, to me, 2025's already been a rousing success for the 22-year-old from Park Hill. I think he has enough to go into the offseason and really catapult him to a breakout 2026.
Vern, when you look at this Texas series, I know Michael Wacha on the hill tonight. Michael Wacha has been fantastic in his last couple starts. Kind of seems to kind of be the guy that, you know, Q can give the ball to and just say, go eat up some innings and be successful doing so. Kind of have his, you know, work cut out for him tonight in this Texas game. But Wacha, what has he kind of been to this team since the All-Star game?
Well, since opening day, He's been your most consistent starter. You know, even while Chris Bubich was the All-Star and, you know, for the first half of the season was one of the 10 best pitchers in the sport. Throughout the season, Michael Wacha's been one of the 20 best pitchers in the sport. And now that Bubich finds himself out for the season, Wacha just continues to be, you know, in my time in big league clubhouses, I've never been around a more well-rounded professional as Michael Wacha. I'm talking about the preparation, The way that he interacts with his teammates, the way that he fires the boys up, the way that he interacts with fans, with media, the diligent work he puts in between starts, on start day. Big fan of Michael Wacha. Just, you know, what you're describing is exactly why he's been able to last in this game for 13, 14 years. We could say the same thing about Salvador Perez. It's easy to take him for granted. And I've admitted that with Michael Wacha, I take him for granted. But that just shows his greatness, is that every time he's on the hill, it's not even that I'm hoping that he gives the team a chance. And I'm not trying to jinx him here. But you just know he's going to give the team a chance to win. It might not always be pretty, but you're going to look up in the sixth inning and the game's going to be either the Royals up big or the Royals within one or two. Michael Wacha to me has already run away with the Royals pitcher of the year. And if this team has any hopes of tracking down the New York Yankees, that must continue down the stretch, because we already talked about Seth Lugo And even though Noah Cameron nor Ryan Berger look much like a rookie, they are rookies. So you know what? I'm fine putting the lion's share of the pressure in that starting rotation on the right shoulder and right arm of Michael Wacha.
It's interesting you bring Michael Wacha up for pitcher of the year, and we can have a debate on that, Vern. I mean, it's been 20 years. We haven't had a debate on who can be the pitcher of the year, because I was at Cameron with the way that he came up and pitched. He's been a pretty good candidate for that. But, you know, hey, it's awesome that we're in that category. 38 games to go. What does this team have to do to make it into the playoffs?
They still need, in my opinion, they still need to clean it up. You know, they still need to play a better brand of baseball. Now, the offense, thankfully, with the outstanding plate appearances you're getting on a nightly basis from Yastrzemski and Frazier, the offense has allowed this pitching staff, this defense, and this base running group some margin for error, right? They never had that in April, May, June, and July. So when the base running mistake by a Michael Garcia or a defensive miscue, when that was made, it would always come back to bite you. You would always lose that game because the offense could not muster together quality innings, quality at-bats, persistent pressure on the defense. And thankfully, you're seeing that now. But push comes to shove. We start getting towards the end of September. We get in these series against desperate teams like the Rangers, good teams like the Detroit Tigers. You're not going to be able to get away with those mistakes. So defensively and on the base paths, clean that up, because the pitching staff and the offense now, I think we feel pretty confident that these guys are going to do the job and give you a chance. So if the defense and the base running can look more like a Royals defense and base running unit, which it must, if that happens, I think this team can track down the New York Yankees. But it starts with the fundamentals. It always starts with the fundamentals with the Kansas City Royals. To me, the Royals will never make the playoffs unless they're an elite defense or an elite base running team. That's not just this year. That's for all time, so long as the structure of Major League Baseball remains the same. The Royals have to do the little things well, very well. Haven't really done that much this season. Hopefully we see that down the stretch of these final 38.
Vern, we know what everybody else says. Seattle's in Philadelphia. Boston's at home against the Orioles. The Yankees are on the road to Tampa Bay. Obviously, the Royals are here against Texas. But what do you have coming up at 5:30 tonight?
Well, On Deck Show action live from Kauffman Stadium with a pair of tickets to see Mike Trout and the Angels come to Kauffman Stadium in a few weeks. You can have a chance to win those tonight and tomorrow night and Wednesday night, as all three games are 6:40 first pitches leading into Thursday's afternoon tilt. But 1 hour before first pitch, your chance to win Royals tickets every game day on 96.5 The Fan.
There you go, Vern. Thursday, 82 degrees, humidity out of here. You might need a jacket instead of sweating.
Hallelujah.
Thank God. I mean? This past weekend, man, God left. Saturday, we were out there. It was brutal. I can't imagine. Tip of the cap to anybody who went to that game yesterday and sat in the 105-degree heat, man. Oh, my God.
Especially the parents.
Yeah.
And I saw a lot of kids out there, and I got to imagine that 7th, 8th, 9th inning and the drive home with those tired, hot kids was brutal.
Hey, I got a car of four of them that fell asleep after the Ty Myers concert, so I was good.
There we go.
Vern, man, they love.
Go ahead.
Do your daughter, a lot of young girls love that Ty Myers. I mean, I don't know if the Festo girls fall into that camp.
And let me tell you, every Johnson County High School kid was at that game on Saturday night. I'm not kidding.
Sure
they knew everything.
What's on your mind right now? The song you can't get out of your head? That breaking story? Or that conversation you just have to be a part of?
That's the brand new song from...
This is a breaking news report. He shoots! He scores!
That's radio. Happening now. Connecting you to what matters most exactly when it's happening. From the airwaves to every device you stream on, radio is everywhere you are. It's local, live, and it's for you. Tag your favorite radio station today on social media and use hashtag National Radio Day to celebrate. That's hashtag National Radio Day.
Everybody in that stadium. Everybody knew everybody in that stadium.
I had no idea who that young man was, but kudos to the Royals, because that's how you bring the kids to the yard. That worked out well.
I still don't know who he is, but but the kids did, and it worked, man.
Yes, it did. Big crowd.
All right, Vern, stay hydrated, stay cool tonight as you dog this one out, and we'll be ready to go for Texas for four.
What's on your mind right now? The song you can't get out of your head? That breaking story? Or that conversation you just have to be a part of?
That's the brand new song from...
This is a breaking news report. He shoots! He scores!
Scores.
That's radio happening now, connecting you to what matters most exactly when it's happening. From the airwaves to every device you stream on, radio is everywhere you are. It's local, live, and it's for you. Tag your favorite radio station today on social media and use hashtag National Radio Day to celebrate. That's hashtag National Radio Day.